Hi, this is Randy, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains, episode 90. Welcome to The Beauty Brains, where honest-to-gosh scientists give you the straight scoop on beauty and personal care products. I'm Randy Schuler, and I'm here with my guest host, Perry Romanowski.
Hey, Randy. Wait, guest host?
I still have it in the back of my head that I'm going to phase you out of the show eventually, and so this is just gradually. Don't worry about it. Later, like long time.
Are you in talks with like Paula Bougan or something? I saw some comments on our episode where we talked about whether alcohol was drying.
Okay.
And someone in the comments there said, hey, did you guys read that article that Paula Bougan had about how alcohol is bad?
It's funny you mention that because I was just looking on her site to see what research she cited.
Yeah.
Did you do that already?
I went to the article. I was reading through it. And, you know, I'm not exactly convinced by what was written there.
Well, and I honestly didn't know we were going to discuss this today. I would have taken some notes. But I remember one of the pieces of research was more about the effect of the detergents, you know, the surfactants used in hand sanitizers, you know, and alcohol was sort of thrown in the mix as a potential problem, but they didn't really tease out. And I think it even said surfactants were the primary issue. So therefore, what does that mean about alcohol?
I don't know. Yeah. So in their article about how bad alcohol is, they cite a few research things, which alcohol is like the minor player. It's like the surfactants are the bad thing. So.
And another article she cited was that alcohol isn't good for use in sanitizing opened wounds, which is fine, but that's not the point we're making at all.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that also demonstrates a lack of understanding of formulating. And when you have a little bit of alcohol in a formulation, it's not even going to matter.
Right.
So this notion that you should completely avoid alcohol and ethanol in formulating is just not right.
I can tell you're about one step away from declaring all-out war on Paula over this,
I'm kidding.
We're fans fans of Paula's work, absolutely.
We are big fans.
Are tending to disagree on this one particular issue.
But I think what it just does show is that anybody can be biased about any information, and so you've got to always have multiple sources of expertise that you go to when thinking about any topic. Because clearly, I think they have a bias against alcohol. And they also, I think, have a conflict of interest since they do sell products. And
it's their point of difference.
So there you go.
Okay. Anyway, well played, Mr. Romanowski. I'm starting to feel bad about phasing you out of the show now after that.
All right. I'm feisty.
All right. Well, let's see how feisty you are. You want to take on a game of improbable products?
Oh, I'd love to. Let me go get Chance, though.
All right. Well, while you're doing that, let me explain that this is the Brush with Badness edition of Improbable Products. So these are cosmetic products that have had some sort of, you know, encounter with the law or led to some sort of problem with the authorities.
All right.
You got that?
Very interesting. Yeah, all right.
All right. So I'm going to give you three stories about these products. Two of them are ripped from today's headlines. One is just made up. You have to pick the fake one.
All right.
Here we go. Number one, woman illegally paints toenails while driving. Number two, California man robs bank wearing mud mask. And number three, can of hairspray stops airplane. So there you go. Which is the fake?
Those are very interesting. So she's painting her toenails and it gets pulled over. How would somebody see that she's painting her toenails? I'm a little skeptical of that one.
An alert law enforcement officer, I would assume, but I don't know. Go ahead. You make your guess.
All right. The mask is just ridiculous. It totally sounds like something you would make up. Mm. And I believe the hairspray could totally stop an airplane. So, it's down to those first two. I find it really hard to believe that a police officer could see somebody painting their toenails. Not that I don't think someone would do that, but I'm going to say that one's the fake.
Okay.
Let me check with Chance here.
Okay.
Chance says the mask one is the fake.
Okay. Okay, so you and Chance agree that a can of hairspray can stop an airplane? Seriously? You think that's possible?
I think what happened is somebody saw the hairspray, they're like, hey, bomb, and you know, yeah.
So. Well, you're not too far off. You are both correct. This is real. This was a Chicago-bound flight coming out of San Francisco, a Southwest Airlines flight, and the ramp agent noticed a strange smell coming from one of the suitcases. So he or she alerted security. They called firefighters twice. The firefighters came to the scene. The first time they couldn't find the bag that had the dangerous odor, but the second time around they found the bag. The firefighters inspected it and found that the scent was indeed coming from a bottle of hairspray.
That crack fire department.
I have my suspicions it was Tresemme hairspray, but I'm just making that up. I don't know if that's true or not. But it did stop the plane from leaving for about an hour. So
wow.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Hey, they could use that in their advertising, right?
So strong, you know, strong enough to hold up an airplane.
holds for 24 hours.
Yeah, right. Nice. All right. So next up, and I guess this is where you and Chance split, but this idea of a woman illegally painting her toenails while driving, that actually is true. I don't see why. I think it's egregious that someone would do that. I don't find it hard to believe that a cop couldn't spot that as she drove by. I mean, how could you not see that if somebody's got their foot up on the dashboard while they're driving? I mean, that could be easily seen.
Yeah, but if your assumption is that they're painting their feet on the ground.
Oh, I see. Well, okay, bad assumption. But yeah, this woman, the person describing this, I guess it was the person's cousin, said, yeah, she's very thin and flexible, and she actually had her foot up on the steering wheel and was painting her toes as she was driving. Like, oh my God.
There's not a lot of time in society these days.
It's multitasking. You know, yeah. Now, I mean, it's funny and it's ridiculous. There is a sad side to this, though. There's another story where, and this was in 2009, a woman was painting her fingernails while she was driving, and she struck and killed a motorcycle driver.
Oh, geez.
So,
way to bring the show down.
Well, no, but I mean, there's a little public service announcement time, right? Seriously, people, don't be painting your nails or, you know, doing anything else that leads to distracted driving.
I've seen people putting on, like, eyelash makeup and stuff. Right. I mean, yeah, do that.
Anyway, all right, sorry about that. So this all means that the California man robbing a bank wearing a mud mask was just completely made up. I thought that just sounded funny. So, and you fell for it.
Well, and Chance wins again.
Chance is kind of kicking your butt.
If one of our listeners wants to go through all the old shows and give me my rating, my scores.
I might do that myself. That sounds like fun. All right. Okay, so for the rest of today's show, we're going to answer a listener question about some hair care treatments. If we get done with that, maybe we'll answer a couple of quickie questions, but at least we'll get through this this question from MC Wonders.
Hello, Beauty Brains. This is MC Wonders. I absolutely love your blog, and I wanted to ask you about a new product on the market by John Frieda called 7-Day Volume In-Shower Treatment. They claim that this new rinse-out gel will create fullness that lasts through 3 to 5 shampoos. Of course, the marketing claim is really tempting, but I wanted to get your thoughts on the ingredients if this type of new technology could even work.
Thanks for the question, MC. And, you know, by the way, Perry, we should probably, you know, remind people if they want to submit an audio question, what do they do?
Yeah, it's real simple. All you have to do is record it on your phone, and then you can email that to us at thebeautybrains.com. Thebeautybrains@gmail.com.
There you go.
You can also just email it to us.
Isn't that what you just said?
Oh, well, yeah, I guess I did just say that. you can record it in your own room and send us the cassette tape. We will accept cassette tapes too.
Nice. Well done, Perry. I'm glad I threw that to you. Mental note to replace Perry on the show. All right. So anyway, actually, this question is similar to the one we answered about the L'Oreal hair thickening products. But John Frieda uses different technology, and they've got some different claims. So I think this is worth a look on its own. So let's start by taking a look at some of their key claims and what they mean.
Right. So, in case you didn't realize, John Frieda is owned by Kao.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kao, K-A-O, yeah. They're a really large Japanese company, and they actually came in some years back and they bought the Jergens company. So
right.
They own Jergens, and yep. Jergens owned John Frieda, so now they're all part of Kao.
Yep.
Now, this company's not as large as Procter & Gamble or Unilever, although they are located in Cincinnati, just right by Procter & Gamble.
Hmm.
But this company's certainly big enough that they've done their homework, and so you know that they've researched their products, and they are going to have solid claim support.
Sure.
So let's take a look at what they're saying about their volumizing product. One claim is that they texturally transforms fine hair. Okay, so it somehow changes the texture of your hair. Now, is that really meaningful? Mm. You know, not really. I mean, any ingredient that can deposit on the hair and change the way that it feels could be said to change the texture.
Yeah, it's
right?
Very, very subjective.
All right, next claim. Leaves hair full even after multiple washes. So is this an important claim? I mean, it depends on the quantification, right? I mean, how much fuller does it make your hair? Who knows? There's a bit of a weasel wording here because it's only claiming to leave hair full.
Yeah.
That doesn't, you know, that sounds like it just doesn't take away any volume, right?
Right.
It's not even directly claiming to add volume.
Right. We used to use that, you know, leaves hair, whatever, naturally clean, leaves hair full of volume and body. Leaves it just means you're not reducing it. So that's not a very impressive claim.
And then how many washes does it last through, right? Multiple could mean 2, which is not very compelling, or it could mean 20, which, you know, that's much more impressive. Mm. All right, next claim. This lightweight, semi-permanent treatment establishes a base for volumized styling, enabling her to achieve a look previously viewed unattainable. So, establishes a base for volumized styling? It doesn't really mean much at all, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of being able to achieve a look viewed unattainable, it sounds puffery. I mean, what is that?
Yeah, and you know this, I mean, this has nothing to do with the claim, but it seems odd to me that they chose to write this in the third person. Like, the claim is it enables her instead of enabling you. Like, I'm not sure I remember any other beauty claims that are written that way. I thought that was odd phrasing.
Yeah, that's well, maybe that was just like a copywriting mistake that nobody caught, you know?
I don't know, it's an odd voice to use. But
anyway. Exactly. The next claim is the treatment works by penetrating into each fiber and amplifying each hair strand for lift that lasts through multiple washings. Now, I guess we've already talked about that.
Yeah, in that mention, if you want to hear the details on that, go back to that episode about the L'Oreal product. But, you know, you don't really want volumize your hair by plumping up individual hair fibers, because that process of swelling the fiber causes the cuticles to lift up, which is not healthy at all. So that's really not how these products work. So I'm not impressed by that claim either.
Yeah. And then finally, it says volume that outlasts your shampoo. So if your shampoo lasts you a month, this volume should last.
Well, I was thinking more like, okay, I shampooed my hair, and then I'm going to shampoo it again tomorrow, so it lasts until tomorrow. Like, what? I don't even know what that means. Outlast your shampoo.
I don't know. Whatever it is, it sets the bar fairly low. You know, I guess it's just another way of saying it lasts through one shampooing.
I was
thinking, like, I have a bottle of shampoo which has been in my shower for like 2 months. So volume should.
Yeah, I don't think they meant it as a shelf life question.
So those are the claims. Let's look at how the product works.
Okay, so if you look at the ingredient list, and we'll post that in the show notes, but you'll see several, you know, standard styling polymers. I'm talking about things like, you know, polyquaternium 37, VPVA copolymer, things you'd see in mousses, gels, some hairsprays, and so on.
Right.
So these are used in a lot of styling products. But there is one ingredient that's not quite as commonly used, and that's polyimide 1. Now, that's the official INCI name, and Perry, INCI stands for?
International Nomenclature of Cosmetic Ingredients.
Very good. But it's shorthand for a much longer, more descriptive chemical name. And Perry, it's always fun to hear you pronounce these tongue twisters. You want to take a stab at reading the true name of polyimide 1?
Sure, Randy. You know how I became a chemist just so I could say long words. All right. The real name for the chemical name for polyimide 1 is isobutylene dimethylaminopropyl maleimide ethoxylated maleimide malic acid copolymer.
And that's why we call it polyimide 1. Nice job. You might also hear this referred to by its trade name. So, you know, that's the brand name by the company that sells this stuff, and it's called Aquaflex XL30.
From good old Aqualon.
Indeed, indeed. So this material is an amphoteric polymer. Now that means it can have a positive or a negative charge depending on the pH. And according to Aqualung, it has, quote, unique film properties that demonstrate benefit in curling, volume boosting, and durable hold on hair. And then in addition, it says in hair care, when used with typical thickeners, Aquaflex provides synergistic high humidity curl retention. So it's known for, you know, giving, you know, long-lasting curls and body to hair without having a heavy afterfeel, right? Which makes sense. That's the kind of polymer you would want to use for this application.
Sure.
So, I mean, this is an effective polymer. It's not technology that's exclusive to Frida. I mean, we've seen this used in many other brands. Not too many mainstream products, I was surprised. But, like, you know, Jessie Curl uses this in a couple of products. The Sammy line, if you're familiar with that salon brand, sure. They have a product with it. Orlando does, Bosley does. So you can find this stuff around if you find that you like the feel that polyimide 1 gives your hair, you can find it in other products.
Sure.
And it's also available in different product formats. You can get it in a mist, in a mousse, in a leave-in liquid, you know, at all different price points. Now this particular John Frieda product happens to be a liquid.
All right, let's take a look at how the product is used, right? So yeah. The instructions tell you to first shampoo and condition your hair. And then, while you're still in the shower, apply a generous amount of this product and let it sit on your hair for 3 to 5 minutes before rinsing. Now, here's the important part. Next, you have to blow dry your hair. Now, why is this important? It's because the heat of the blow dryer essentially melts the polymer. It distributes more evenly across the hair shaft, and it helps it bond to the hair better. Mm-hmm. Now, just as importantly, the blow dryer helps to create more volume in the hair, so if you're not a fan of blow drying, this product is probably not for you.
Yeah.
And then finally, the instructions say to allow 2 to 3 washes before your next treatment. Now, allow, that kind of seems like strange language. It sounds to me like, you know, the product is only going to stay on your hair through 2 or 3 washings.
I guess, yeah.
Now, that may be 7 days for some people, but, you know, only a day or two for others.
You know, it's funny, when you look at claim support, you have some latitude in how you define these things. And if the product name is, you know, 7-day volume or whatever, so that, you know, I don't know about you, I wash my hair every day. So for me, that's 7 right. shampoos. But I know some right. women, you know, I think the average is 3 times a week or something. I forget the numbers. But, you know, so, you know, they're going by sort of the time, not the number of shampoos.
Right.
So it's a little bit tricky. Yeah.
So far, everything we've said it's rather theoretical. So let's take a look and see if there's any proof of how this product works.
Yeah. So, I mean, it would be unusual to find any published data on a product like this. I mean, there's no patented technology here, you know, that you'd find in the technical literature. There's really nothing so unique that the company would probably have written an article in the, you know, Journal of the Society of Cosmetic Chemists or anything like that. So the best thing we can do is to look to some of the supplier literature to see if they've published anything about, you know, the ingredients. So we did find a couple of pieces of information that, you know, help explain the volumizing effects as well as, you know, how well it lasts through shampoos. So the first article was titled Measurements of Hair Volume by Laser Stereometry. And that's the March 2009 issue from the Journal of the Secret Society of Cosmetic Chemists, if you guys want to look that up. Now, the article was really about determining the best methods for measuring hair volume, but they did happen to test polyimide 1. Wow. So, I mean, this article does, you know, give sort of one data point, but it was really interesting just to read how difficult it really is to measure hair volume in a meaningful way, which you well know. Perry was in charge of the claims group at Alberto Culver for a while, and so it's...
We spent months just trying to figure out how do you quantify it, and there was really no good way.
Well, I'll tell you what the researchers in this article did, and what was interesting, first they said that based on consumer research, they determined that there were 3 key words that described hair body. So volume, which meant bulk and thickness, springiness, or bounce, and stiffness of the hair set, so meaning, you know, it wasn't soft. So they sort of used those parameters, and then they assessed several methods of determining hair volume. And they used, you know, that old standard method, remember, where you would take a hair tress and then you hook it up to the machine that measures force. Right. And then you pull this hair tress through this ring of a set diameter. Right. And, you know, if the more volume the hair has, the more force will be required to pull it through that narrow ring. So they actually tested that method.
Right, yeah.
Then they used what they called the root lift method, where essentially they took a hair tress and formed, you know, bent it to form a U shape.
Okay.
Right? And then they, you know, anchored each end so it sort of like looked like, I guess, an upside down U, if you could picture that.
Okay. Like an arch?
Yeah, like an arch. That's like an probably arch, a better way to do it. But they called it the root lift method. But anyway, okay. Then they measured how well that arch was retained. So the higher the arch was at the end of the testing, the better the hair volume was.
Okay.
All right. And then they finally used another method that they cleverly called the straight hair method, where they just took straight hair and then built volume by what they called mechanical manipulation and blow drying. So I think they just probably styled the hair tresses, right?
Right.
And then they measured the retention of volume from there. So
I think one of the things to point out to the audience out there, you might think that, you know, cosmetic science is really high tech, but some things are, but other things are just like, we just kind of make things up.
Well, there was a high tech aspect to this testing because they used laser imaging to do the actual volume measurement. So we just talked about how they sort of set the tress into different configurations. And by the way, you know, when we talk about tresses, we're talking about bundles of hair fibers that are, you know, glued to a plastic card. We're not talking about, you know, the hair on somebody's head.
Right. Although it is actual human hair.
Right, but it's not on somebody's head during the testing. Yeah. It's been removed.
Somebody went and sheared a bunch of people's head.
There you go.
There you go.
So anyway, they used a laser to take the actual measurements, which was kind of cool. So they did manage to show that using these techniques, if you apply between 1 and 4% polyimide 1 to hair, you can maintain some percentage of that hair volume. Yeah, but almost any styling polymer is going to do that, right? I mean,
it's
really not that remarkable. Now, you know, traditional styling agents will wash out of hair pretty quickly.
Right.
So the point of difference here could be in this, you know, 7-day volumizing product is that it stays on your hair longer. So let's talk about that.
Well, of course, we couldn't find any published data proving the durability of this polymer. But there are two other data points that help to make the case that it is true. First, there's the information and the supplier literature that talks about it lasting through multiple washings. Even though the company doesn't provide any data, we know that Aqualon is a reliable source, so it's reasonable to assume that they have something to back this up. Although, you know, they do have kind of a bias to come up with claims that would be convincing. So not great, but it's something. You know, the reason I'm not too concerned about this is pretty simple. The claim itself isn't really impactful. And here's what I mean by that. If they claim that the product tripled the volume of hair and maintained 100% of that increase for a week, that would be pretty impressive, right? And you'd want to see specific data. Yeah. Remember, extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof.
Exactly.
But all that they really are saying is that it gives you some fullness and it lasts up to 7 days, depending on how often you shampoo.
Yeah.
So for that to be true, all they really have to do is prove that some residue remains on the hair through a couple of shampoo cycles. And in fact, that's exactly what the patent demonstrates. Mm-hmm. We'll put a link in the show notes. Yeah. And actually, I was reading some forensic science report one time, and it showed that even the surfactants from your shampoo, they stay on your hair even after you've rinsed for a certain amount of time. So it's pretty simple to prove that an ingredient is going to stay on your hair through a multiple shampooings. They did a test on hair tresses treated with polyamide 1 composition where they shampooed the tresses every day for 5 days. And they showed a residual effect of smoothness and shine. Mm. Of course, these are very small effects, and they're measured on tresses, which allow you to take very small measurements. This doesn't automatically mean you'll be able to perceive this stuff when it's on your hair after 5 washes, though, right?
Yeah.
It's also interesting to note that this testing was done with a blow dryer and a flat iron, and they showed polyamide 1 has some smoothing properties. So if you just blow dry with the stuff, it creates volume, but if you flat iron your hair, the polymer then is going to keep it smooth and flat. So
you'd actually be taking away volume. Depending. Exactly. So how you process your hair is critical to how this product could work.
Right. This technology can give you volume or take it away. It depends. So, Randy, what's the bottom line on this one?
Well, so to answer MC's question, this product does use a polymer that can bind to hair and increase volume to some extent, depending on how you style your hair. There's evidence that the technology can stay on your hair through multiple shampoos, so I think their basic claims are supported here. But I think this is one of these products where individual results will vary greatly. If you have the type of hair that's very sensitive to having a residue on it, and that residue can give you the kind of the texture and the feel that you want, then you're probably going to really like this product. But for some people, that residue isn't going to be sufficient, especially after a couple of shampoos. It's really not going to have much impact on your volume. So, unfortunately, there's no way to predict how well this is going to work for any given individual. But the good news is, the product's not unreasonably priced. I think it was like $8 or $9.
Right.
So if this benefit appeals to you, there's really no reason not to try it. So this is when I would say, you risk a couple of dollars, try this. If you don't like the way it feels, you're either going to like it, or you're going to feel it doesn't do anything, or it's going to feel objectionable on your hair. Maybe it's too much of a residue for you. You can quickly wash it out. Even if you just had to wash your hair 2 or 3 times in a row, you're going to get rid of almost all of it right away. There's really no downside to not trying it. And, if you like this ingredient, there are also other products on the market, like we said, that you could go find and maybe try those instead. So, why not? There's at least enough data here to say it's worth a shot.
This technology kind of reminded me of that. Remember that 3-in-1 technology we were working on? It was a shampoo that washed, conditioned, and left a styling residue in your hair.
Oh my God, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
That was interesting, because talk about a tough balancing act. Like if I'm remembering correctly, if you washed your hair with it and rinsed your hair just exactly 32 seconds or something, it was just this small window. If you did that, then it felt like, oh my God, it feels like I've got gel in my hair. But if you rinsed your hair for, 37 seconds, it was completely gone. So,
companies have been trying to incorporate these kind of styling polymers in different products for a long time. And this is really difficult technology to work with.
Well, and it's interesting, too, and every company has their own approach to this. If you're just looking at it purely from a claims support perspective, which is kind of how we treated it here, you can find evidence that it'll give you 7-day volume, right? I mean, no question about that. But if you're looking at it from a consumer perspective, where you're, doing testing and seeing if people perceive that and then tweaking the formulas to give that, not every company does that kind of work.
Right.
That's where you get the really, the best experience. But it's really tough, where it's easy to put a product together just to pass some claims test, it's not as easy to put a product together that really delivers a differentiated experience to the consumer. So that's why the beauty industry is in the shape it is.
It's also why I think, all things being equal, you can look at the big companies that put out products are probably putting out better products than smaller companies, because that's the kind of research that they spend money to do.
Right.
Yeah. So,
I agree. It depends on the type of product. It's not to say that somebody who's making their own, we talked about handcrafted soap bars before, right? You may absolutely love the smell and feel of somebody's, oatmeal soap that they make in their garage, and that's great.
Right.
But if you're looking at something that's a technology-driven claim, like what we've talked about today, yeah, you want to go with a company that's actually done, has the resources to do that kind of testing. So, anyway.
Although that's not to say that just because they have the resources doesn't mean they don't pull these kind of claim shenanigans too.
This is why you need to listen to the beauty brain, so we can decipher this for you and tell you, what's probably the best value for your money.
And this is also why you should go out and get our book, It's Okay to Have Lead in Your Lipstick.
And answers to other beauty questions you're dying to know.
Because it keeps us funded and helps us keep doing these shows.
If we relied on that book funding to do this show, we'd have already been off the air. So anyway, speaking of going off the air, Perry, we are out of time. We did not get to our other questions today, but that's all right.
Darn.
We'll save them. We'll save them for next time.
Hey, we could tease it for the next show.
Well, I'll tell you what, come back next week, everybody. Actually, we'll do this in 2 weeks. So come back in 2 weeks, everybody, and find out if 90% of cosmetic chemicals are really untested.
Ooh, I heard that.
All right, so until next time, everybody, remember,
Be brainy about your beauty.
Pump up the volume, pump up the volume, pump up the pump, pump, pump it up.